This is the Emerging Women Podcast, where we become inspired to live and lead from the truth of who we are. We're creating a new paradigm for power that includes the feminine perspective because the world needs it. Yes, and welcome, Emerging Women. Welcome, Saira Rao, the author of White Women. Everything you already know about your own racism, got to talk about that already piece and how to do better. Because I will say, when I read this, I didn't already know a lot of what was in here. So I'm very curious about that. I will let the audience know at Emerging Women that we do have an endorsement by Chelsea Handler, which is so amazing. The book is put out by Penguin. And I'm just so pleased to have Saira here with us. I want to tell you a little bit about her. We met when I was launching Emerging Women, like ages ago, basically a decade ago. And at that point, she had already been she's a novelist. People, anybody that's written anything that's been published, I bow to, but talk about range. This woman has range. She's written a novel. She's also the co-founder of Race to Dinner. We're going to talk about that a little bit, which is a conversation networking platform where white women can actually have real discussions about what does it mean to be on, to discover their own racism, our own racism, but also to do something about it and have just real conversation, messy conversation. And that is a for-profit organization, which I love. And Saira, I want to talk about that also. She also, when we met, she was launching a media company and a publishing company for voices of color, and was very passionate about that. And again, some of these things are still in place. Some of them have evolved into other things, but I just want you to understand the range of the creative being that we have on the podcast. She's also been a candidate for Colorado's congressional district. She's run for office. I mean, that is alone. I mean, and she's still standing here and she's still thriving and she has survived. So without further ado, I do want to get into the book, but I would like to offer you, Saira, an opportunity to tell us about your journey. And we don't have to get into too much detail, but how did you get to this place where you're publishing White Women?
Yeah. And, you know, I should tell you, which this news really just came down, which is stunning, is we debuted on the New York Times bestseller list. So that, I mean,
that's a day old. So as we record this, we just found out yesterday that you're on the New York Times bestseller list.
Yeah. So the book debuted at number 9. So we're stunned, you know, we're absolutely stunned. And so in a nutshell, Race to Dinner is the crux of all of it. So Regina Jackson is a Black woman who lives in Denver. We met when she worked on my congressional campaign, which was in 2018. And she noticed I ran against Diana DeGette, who has been there for 1 million, 2 billion years and has done exactly zero in my estimation. And I was attempting to primary her out. And this is a Democratic primary, right? And so at every event, my entire platform was basically anti-racism, because I believe racism is the foundation of all of our ills, societal ills. And, you know, at every single event, every time I spoke, there'd be a line of super liberal white Democratic women around the block waiting to tell me how not racist they were. And can you meet me for a drink? Can you meet me for coffee? Can you meet me for dinner? And I had to do all those things because I was running for office. None of them voted for me, of course. A lot of their husbands did, interestingly enough. But after I lost and I was sort of dragged on, I was totally dragged on Twitter. I kind of hit the national map of the right wing Nazi press, Breitbart, Fox News, all of that. And I became much more prominent and my profile expanded greatly. And the invitations kept pouring in, coffee, drinks, whatever. At that point, I'm like, no, you know, I'm not running for anything. I don't need to spend money and energy meeting you all so you can tell me how not racist you are. And then Regina had a friend, we'll call her Amy, who came to her one day and said, you know, I'm done with Saira. She hates all white people, but can you arrange for a dinner with us? Mm-hmm. And the straw that broke that Amy's back, or that Karen's back, is that I said that Beto O'Rourke was a white savior. And I said, I donated money to his campaign. And if I lived in Texas, I would vote for him because multiple things can and are in fact true. We live in this world of false binaries. And that's what broke this woman. And that's apparently what made me hate all white people. So Regina came to me and said, can you have dinner with her? I said, no. But how about this? I got a list of other women who have asked. Why don't we get those together? You invite her. We'll sit down for dinner. We'll do it. And it was full like white woman Broadway musical, crying, tears, anger, arms folded, frustration. Posted about it on Facebook and it went viral. And that's really when Race to Dinner was born. Regina was like, we educate white women for free all the time. We should just do this. We'll call it Race to Dinner. And that day itself that I posted about it, a white woman by the name of Patty Ivan Specht out of LA, who's a documentary filmmaker, reached out to me and said, I've been following you for years and I've been wanting to figure out a way to elevate your work, but I've never been able to figure out how. And now suddenly, oh my God, there's dinners. There's, mm-hmm. can I do a documentary on you both? And we were like, sure. It literally had this conversation in my office in Denver. I now live in Virginia. I just moved here 2 months ago, but when I was still living in Denver, had this conversation in my office and we were like, great. And the chances of her doing it are zero and or 1%. And out of the 1%, the chances of her doing it well is basically zero. And we are now 2 weeks away from our global premiere of Deconstructing Karen. The documentary has been done, in fact, and it's been done beautifully. It's premiered on the CBC in Canada last month. Shortly after it premiered in Canada, Fox News did a 5-minute long primetime hit piece on us comparing Canada running it to Pearl Harbor and declaring war in the United States. And then we wrote a book. So we sold the book in early 2020, even before white people discovered systemic racism in the summer after George Floyd was murdered.
Yeah.
And here we are. It's sort of serendipitous that the movie and the book are coming out in the same month, but it's working, Chantel.
It's working. So working and yeah. So needed. And George Floyd was just, I mean, it wasn't even the beginning. I don't even want to say it was the beginning, but there is a lot more intensity around the conversation. We notice it too at the corporate level with what we do in corporations now, and people actually wanting to have conversation, not just give me a talking head and teach me about my diversity and inclusion points, right? They actually want to have these messy conversations and take risks. And so what you're doing, they want to pay for it. Syra. I mean, that's a lot of the stuff that I noticed when I was getting prepared for the podcast was all the negative reviews on the prices that you were charging. And I'm like, this is not a nonprofit. Just because we're talking about race, why does it have to be a nonprofit? So I'm interested in the fact that you did make it a for-profit business. And first of all, congratulations on the documentary. I did not know that. And we will put this, listeners, in the speaker's note on the website. So please get to the podcast page for links to everything that we're talking about today.
Great. Okay. Yeah. I mean, so there's a bit about the fixation on money at the beginning of the book. Very intentionally. And so the reality is that white people, it doesn't matter if we would chart, you know, it's been this obsession over it's thousands of dollars. First of all, I'm not going to even break it down here. It's offensive for me to even have to do it, but go look up how much.
No, please don't do it. But hey, the fact of the matter is how much you have a business.
It's also a fraction. Yes. And it's a fraction of what like Glennon Doyle and Robin DiAngelo charge for half an hour discussion. So whatever, it doesn't matter if we charge $50,000 or 5 cents, it would be too much because the reality is white people think they're doing us a favor by doing this work. Mm-hmm. And we should be paying you all for doing the work. So any amount of money is deeply offensive. And that has been, I'm glad that you did your research because that has been the overarching in every single, and there's been
unbelievable.
Everything is about money, 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 money. So it's duly noted and it was very much on purpose. Everything in that book, the way it's laid out, I mean, it's like 40 pages in before you hit chapter one of the book. Right.
Believe me. And it's a hard 40 pages as a white woman.
Yeah, it is. And we've heard that. And it's laying, it's basically preparing you to actually get to chapter one. And the money piece is a big piece. And so people have obviously gotten very stuck on that. So we're like, let's hit this straight on. So people understand that the fixation on the money around what we charge and that we charge it all is white supremacy. Because you don't sit around asking each other, oh, you paid your therapist how much? You paid your doctor how much? You paid your yoga instructor how much? Why is everyone so obsessed with us charging money for a service that you, and by the way, there's also this notion that we've like drugged and beaten these white women to come into the room. Like these women,
This is a reflection, and this is what I want to say. I am a pro-capitalist. I do think capitalism needs to be reinvented, but you've got a clear case of supply and demand here. You had a price point, and you're filling these dinners with people who would like the services that you offer. I do not understand why Chief or YPO or Vistage or these, you know, companies who are doing women's networking who are charging thousands of dollars are being celebrated, and something like this, which is around racism. And by the way, a woman-owned business, you know, I got excited when I saw that. And I was like, wow, this is actually working. And why is that? It's because people want to have these conversations at this level and they want to change things. So that's exciting. You do not need to apologize for me. And if you don't have financial, I mean, we need to be resourced to fight the fight. Right.
And by the way, I do want to say that, like, we have a community fund on our website where people donate money. And if money is the issue that's preventing you from coming to a dinner, that's never an issue. Like plenty of women get like money from the donations. Like that's never been an issue. So yeah, that's why it's like, let's get that out of the way. By the way,
I think that was smart.
I just want to say I'm not pro-capitalism, but I do exist in a capitalistic country. And so it is what it is, right? Like, it is what it is. And we don't entertain this nonsense about why do you charge? How much do you charge? The other thing, Chantel, is hundreds of thousands of clicks and comments and all this stuff about us. How about this? If you don't like what we're doing, if it doesn't resonate with you, then keep it moving. What is the obsession with like constantly trolling us? I mean, you should see our DMs. You should see the amount of emails that we get.
I've seen the reviews. Yeah, reviews. I've been through.
But those are public. Those are public. I mean, the emails.
Yeah,
and the DMs,
I can't even imagine.
Like next level. People are obsessed. Are completely obsessed. And what's amazing is with this book now coming out. Like, I just went to pick my kid up from school, who was just told an hour ago, because he does not stand for the Pledge of Allegiance. He was told by two kids to go back to his country. So this is happening in middle school. And I was also told by a white woman teacher at the school who was like apparently terrified of me at the beginning of the year, that she just read the book in one sitting and she's about to sit down and reread it again. And like how it's so not what she like, it's so different. And if you actually read the reviews of our book, it's only been out for a week, but we have like dozens of reviews and they're glowing.
I mean, even Goodreads, what do you mean dozens? I don't know if you know this, but I think you have close to 70 reviews on Goodreads.
Oh, see, I didn't even know that. Yeah. That's
amazing. I mean, it's like, and they're mostly five stars.
Yeah.
But the ones that aren't, I mean, okay. So here's the thing. First of all, why would you say everything you already, who is this book for, Syra? Who is this book for?
Well, it's interesting. It's targeted. It's for everybody. And I'll tell you how it's landing on everybody.
But you know, you've been a publisher. You know, you can't actually say one book is for everybody, right? Well, you got to have your like, you know, avatar.
Obviously it's for white women. That's on the title, but it's, originally, what's been really gratifying for us is the amount of Black, Indigenous, and Brown women who have flipped out positively for this book. And we're just hearing, we feel seen, we feel un-gaslit, we feel unfucked, like all of the stuff. But it's basically, it's for white women to be a mirror. And I think a lot of this is, and back to the everything you already know, we all already know. And by the way, I'm going to start with myself because this is how we start. So white people don't freak out and get fragile and upset is, just like you know, as a white woman, Chantal, that you are racist, I know that I am institutionally anti-Black. I know that. I know that I'm casteist as a South Asian. I know I'm colorist because I've been institutionally made to be that way. And so this, get, as Regina always says, fuck your feelings. Get your feelings out of the way. This is not about your feelings at all. The reality is we've all been put through the sausage factory. And when you get put through the sausage factory, you do in fact come out as sausage. And in this country, the kind of sausage you are depends on your skin color. So it's you all, we all come by it honestly. We all come by it honestly. And we have been trained from birth. Look at my kid. He's 12. And they're his peers who are telling him to go back to his country. Where did they get that from? Where do they get that from? They know from the beginning. They're still celebrating Thanksgiving. Like it's all at school. You know, they're doing the Pledge of Allegiance at school. These are
I was shocked to hear that, by the way. But anyway,
national anthems. You know, this is all, look up nationalism, the history of nationalism around the world. It's deeply tied with fascism. Like it's, and we're doing this in schools. And so we all already know. We all already know, but all oppression, just like men know that they are institutionally misogynistic, they have to be. My son is institutionally misogynistic and he's 12. Like this, it's, and it's, we talk about it all the time. That's how you have to undo it. You don't, if you just sit and say or do nothing, you are upholding all the systems. You have to be fighting it actively. So everything in that book, you already know, I already knew, Regina already knew. It's just a matter of being able to see it clearly. And the decades and decades and decades of programming and propaganda, it's very hard to actually come out and see it and say it. But once you do, it's like the weight of the world is off your shoulders. Oh. And then you can get to work. Then you can get to work.
Well, you know, it's funny because I was, I've been in the, you know, every night since I've been reading the book, I've been brushing my teeth and, you know, doing my whatever, like evening routine. And I'm looking in the mirror and I'm like, I'm a racist. I'm a racist. I'm a racist.
Wow, that's amazing.
I know, seriously saying those words. And I will tell you, I started this book going, what the fuck? I am not this person. I am not, I am angry and I've done a lot with emerging women to be inclusive. It's the work that I do. It's, and I tell you, I started, I was like the first three pages and I was like, hang on. Keep going. And I really went in. And when I first started saying it to myself in the mirror, I'm a racist. It was really hard. I was like, I know that that's not true. And then I kept doing it and kept doing it. And like Jay, my husband, is like, what are you doing? What are you doing? And I'm like, I am going to get this, you know, I am going to get this. And it was like you said, I am a racist in a way. Like I've been socially like you claimed that. I'm still kind of getting into that. The power behind your words, as you claimed your perspectives, as they've been spoon fed to you from birth. I'm not, I'm like just stepping into that, but not with the same assuredness that you just did. And I really appreciate you showing us the way. But it was like a weight was lifted. I was like, hell's yes, totally makes sense. And I want to do something about it. And you say emotions aren't part of it, but I'm a hell's yes, emotions are part of it because you're, this is triggering and confronting and not comfortable. And I think that's emotional. And that's what's fueling my desire. Like, you know, then you get halfway to the book and you're ready to roll up your sleeves. Right. But it does speak to you on, to me. It spoke to me. It got me very emotional and very pissed off and very, and so many waves there. And I'm not ready to throw out the towel because that's very fueling. And I want to get involved. I want in a much different way than I have been, ticking off my inclusion and making sure that blah. Do you know what I mean?
I like incredible. And I do think that what you're describing is the work, which is you have to keep going. So if like, that's what, when you feel uncomfortable, when you feel angry, when you feel triggered, that's when, you know, what is it? Sit with it. What is it about what's being said? The movie is going to do all sorts of things to a lot of people as well, because you actually see a real dinner happen. What is it? And by the way, I've gone through this myself and I continue to go through it. right? Mm-hmm. Like, so it's confronting everything you know, everything that you've been taught to believe, everything that you know to be good, right? Mm-hmm. And it's going to take more than one read. I mean, this teacher, you know, said she's going to go back and reread it. Another teacher, South Asian American teacher, told me she's on her third reading and now her kids are reading it. Another one said that they downloaded the Audible book to have their kids listen to it, because all this is deprogramming. This is deprogramming, and it's painful. At first, it is really, it's confusing. It is confusing. But if you stick with it, Chantal, you sticking with it and getting through, and I would advise go back and reread it again.
Oh, I do. I open it up. I pop it open and read stuff all the time. Like, because I mean, that's the kind of book it is. You have it around, you pop it over, you read a couple of sentences and you feel sick.
Oh, no.
That's what I feel. Nausea. What is the title of the one chapter? You're killing us at work. You guys, these are the chapters. Hang on, I can't remember it. Like I mean, you don't say you're effing killing us. And I know we're swearing on this, people, but that's okay. That's just how it is.
You can read I'd say the beginning of that chapter has been overwhelmingly, a lot of white women have said that chapter has been, it's chapter 7, I think.
Yeah. How you kill us, microaggressions, and how you kill us at work. I mean, this is like the tenor. So those people who are listening to this, you know, I mean, just that alone makes me feel nauseous.
Can I read the first sentence?
Yeah, do okay. It.
So we are going to be honest. It's not easy working with you. White women constantly throw us under the bus. You silence us, steal our ideas, inflict, in quotes, microaggression after quote, microaggression. We put that word in quotes because there's nothing micro about the hate you give in boardrooms, operating rooms, newsrooms, classrooms, kitchens, bars, theaters, stadiums, Hollywood, Broadway, Silicon Valley, the Republican Party, the Democratic Party, party planning, and every other workspace. Hearing this likely hurts your feelings. That's basically how, and then we go on an interview because we know you better than you know yourselves, just like all women know men better than they know themselves, because we have to for survival. We've all been in work situations, many work situations. I'm 48. I've been in many work situations over those years where I've been painted as the problem. I've been demoted. I've been ghosted, you know, so on and so forth. Lots of people have been fired. And then in language, right? Blackballed. They've been whiteballed, actually. And why? Right? Because we have a problem. You're angry. You're divisive. And what it ignores is the systems at play. So with that, in that chapter, we very intentionally interviewed a bunch of Black, Indigenous, Latina, and Asian women in different professions to show it doesn't matter if you are a Latina woman in Seattle or a Black woman in Florida, if you're a pastry chef, or if you, you know, are a toll booth collector, it's the same. And that we've heard this repeatedly, Chantal, from a lot of white women who've read it, that chapter really hurt, you know, because
that
you know,
chapter it, hurt, it yeah. hurt, but it also is, it's super motivating. It's super motivating. And I will say all of it has been very motivating. And I think that your analogy with sort of evolution that when we, you know, when we're evolving and we recognize things about ourselves, just as human beings, that, oh my gosh, like I've been doing this pattern that I learned, you know, growing up that imprinted on me at 2 years old or 12 years old, like your son or whatever. And I've been running this survival pattern and I have no control over it. And I can't get away from it. It's in front of my face. And it's really hard. It's really hard to realize that. And it takes you have to be able to move through, like you said, the shock value. And that is where don't take it personally in a way. And we have to take this personally, Syra. We have got to take this personally. There is no women's movement out there if we do not take this personally. Like I am taking this personally. And I was, you know, and I've been with Emerging Women really feeling good about my anti-racism, you know what I mean? Not feeling good about it right now. Want to do more.
And it sounds like that's motivating. And you know,
it is motivating.
Early on when I started doing this, which was, you know, at this point, it's been many years, like 2016, 2017, like really digging into anti-racism work, the thing that I heard over and over again from Black women was, we don't trust Asians. And that stung early on. Why don't you trust me? Aren't we the same? Of course we're not the same. And I knew that. And I knew that. Right. But yet I would sit silently when other South Asian members of the diaspora would say things like, you know, why can't Black people get themselves together? Look at us, look at our families. And I'm like, there's a really big fucking difference between being a Black American descendant of slaves, Black American in this country, and being Asian American, you know, coming here after 1965 Immigration Act, which was made possible by Black people dying for the 1964 Civil Rights Act, and us coming over with our parents. At that time, a big swath of folks came over for science, you know, like medicine, engineering. So to compare the two is anti-Black, you know, it is anti-Black. And I would sit silently hearing about, like, that makes me complicit. That makes me active in my anti-Blackness, right? So I too had a hard time. It's a journey. It's a lifetime of undoing. And now, and then, you know, I went through the sort of the paradigmatic self-loathing. We're all horrible people. Asians are all horrible people. No, you have to get past that too. Like, it doesn't help anyone. And we have a program that I would beckon you, Chantel, to do. It's called Race to Community. And it's an eight-week anti-whiteness program where you do it with a white woman on our team, and you build community with other white women. And you don't even talk about Black and brown people. You talk about whiteness and how whiteness appears in your life and how to deprogram it. But a big piece of it is developing a positive white identity that is not white power, that is not white nationalism, but is also not white shame and guilt. That is like digging through all of it. So going to this self-loathing place is also not helpful, but I think it's a necessary component in it. You have to go, there's so many things that, and by the way, fuck your feelings is not, don't listen to your feelings. It's don't let your feelings overwhelm you to the point where you can't do the work. That's really,
Of course. And I think we're going to get messy. We are getting messy. If we're not getting messy, we're not going through it. That's the thing. I just, the tidiness around this conversation, has to just be gone, which is why I love the dinners.
Hello, lovely listeners. I want to pause for a moment here to make sure that you know how you can get even more access to this type of inspiration and support. Emerging Women has its own membership community, where you get teachings from incredible female leaders and coaching support directly from me, as well as other brilliant members within the Emerging Women Tribe, every month. If you are ready to go deeper into your own leadership and emerging journey, head over to emergingwomen.com for a free trial of our membership community. We've truly designed it as a hub for women like you who want to create change in the world. Don't go it alone, sisters. Head over to emergingwomen.com/membership and start your free trial today. Now, let's get back to our conversation.
I will say that two things. One, I love your connection to identity, and that's why it is personal. And that's why we've been spoon-fed. We have been handed our identity down to us through, you know, all of it. That's what I am talking about. Mm-hmm. That is what gets me emotional, is that I am done. And I love what you suggested to me. And I think it is a personal journey. You know, I don't know if you've heard this story, this saying about diets. The most successful diet is the diet for one, right? And so it's almost like we need, in order for us to do community work, we need to stand strong in our claiming of our identity, whatever that means to us. And it also means unraveling what we've been socialized to believe who we are. So that I applaud. I love that. It's a spiritual journey as well as a sociopolitical and economic one. That is fabulous. But when you talk about community and this idea that you say in the book about white is the default, and we need to get out of this idea of the default. And what do you mean by that? And how can that eradication of what a default is strengthen community?
Yeah, sure. So it's why I'm a brown woman or an Indian woman or an Asian woman on a good day, Typically, it's slurs that are not that, but that's always been the case, right? White women are just women. So it's this, you're the white people are the default. That's what we even say about diversity and inclusion. Diversity is when people say diverse candidates or diverse books or diverse characters, right, we know immediately they're talking about people without white skin. So the default is just a character. The default is just the company. And so when you haven't racialized yourselves, but everyone else has been racialized, you're the default. And that's why we see so the cover, you even said this at the beginning, this doesn't happen. The New York Times bestseller list doesn't happen. And it certainly doesn't happen for books called White Women. So if it was just called Women, yeah, that'd be fine. Mm-hmm. Why is it that white women trigger so many people? And my God, Chantal, does it ever? I mean,
does it ever?
Yeah. So
myself included, I'm telling you, I was like, when I started reading this, it was confronting, but keep going. Yes.
But so, you know, we're asked a lot, what do you want to see in your lifetime? What I want to see in my lifetime is that white people start racializing yourselves. So what does that look like? My Black colleague, my Korean friend, my kids, you know, Mexican friend. How often do you say my white colleague, my kid's white friend, you know, my white neighbor? You don't, because that's the default. So mm-hmm. if you're always the core, then everything is being othered. That is why it's analogous, actually, what's happening with this Pledge of Allegiance thing. Been thinking about this a lot, is if the default is nationalism and national anthem and Pledge of Allegiance our nationalism. And again, we don't know our history by design. We don't know how much American flags everywhere is weird. It's not different from other periods of fascism in other parts of the world. You know, pledges of allegiances, national anthems, these are all very politically heavy things. Mm-hmm. And if we put them in a place in schools, you know, we're saying that's the default. The default is essentially fascism. And if you refuse, Colin Kaepernick, look at what happened to Colin Kaepernick. Mm-hmm, okay. Mm-hmm. You know, if you refuse to do that, you will be othered. You will be out of business. You will be killed. Colin Kaepernick has not been drafted again, mm-hmm. right? All mm-hmm. he did, all this protest peacefully, he took a knee. Mm-hmm. It's how could it be more peaceful than that? And he's finished, right? Mm-hmm. He's finished. Mm-hmm. So it's being cognizant of what we have as the default and what is the other. So my son, by not and all he has done is just sat. He has not screamed. He is not asking other people why they're doing it. He's just sitting peacefully. And every time there's a pledge and he doesn't do it, it's gang bullying. And today's the first day someone actually said to him, go back to your country. That is openly racist and xenophobic. And that kid, these kids are getting it somewhere. Right? They're getting it somewhere. So if we don't start interrogating the default, mm-hmm. the default is naturally fascist. The default, mm-hmm. the country is founded. This whole, we got to get back to like,
I mean, get back to what? I mean,
the country, it's fascism. The country has always been. And so if you don't interrogate it at every turn, we are now in an era where we have, I mean, look, everyone's celebrating yesterday, the midterm, not everyone, Democrats are celebrating as if like some great thing has happened. The bar is so low right now in this country mm-hmm. that because like it wasn't horrendous, because it wasn't a total bloodbath, we're all dancing in the streets. And thank God. I mean, thank God for Gen Z and the youth for coming out to vote mm-hmm. because it could have been so much worse, but it's still pretty fucking bad. You know, it's still really,
well, it's bad. Not over as we speak. I'm just saying, but,
No. So so as for community, back to your question is how can Black women be in community with any Black, non-Black person, if we're not willing to acknowledge our place in the power structure, because mm-hmm. then it's not safe for them. How can any Black, Indigenous, or Brown woman be in community with you all white women unless you have fully racialized yourself? And by racializing yourself, you are squarely putting yourself on that hierarchy of power. That's your mm-hmm. acknowledging where you are.
I mean,
and then we can start talking, but then we can start, you have way more power than me, and mm-hmm. I have way more power than Regina, and we all have to be cognizant of that. Right. Otherwise, we're going to fuck each other over, and you can't have community right. if you're fucking each other over.
Right. So as somebody who leads a community, okay, also as someone who leads a company that goes in to raise women's leadership in the tech industry when it's not the focus, right? So let's just say with the, you know, the work that we do in leadership, we're not being hired as a DEI. We're being hired to deliver leadership programs. How would you say somebody in my position or our emerging women, when we're in that context and we're not invited to overtly, you know, do that, how could we make a difference in this without having, you know, the go-ahead from the company to have these conversations?
Look, Chantal, we are so, like, I think part of the reason our work has been so successful, I want to just remind you, this is just I just recently back to Virginia 2 months ago. I was in Denver for close to 9 years. Random Asian woman, random Black woman having dinners with random white women in Denver, Colorado. Why? Yeah. Why has this created such a storm? And I'll tell you why. Because it applies everywhere. So I think this notion that things fly in corporations versus nonprofits versus academics, that's all like colonialism, capitalism, white supremacy, patriarchy. We live in a capitalistic society, which I wish that we didn't, but we do. Mm-hmm. And so companies are society. So this notion that there's some like what professionalism, American professionalism is white supremacy culture, you know? And so I have no interest. I mean, I'm very happy to come into companies. I'm curious. And here's my challenge actually to the women listening.
Give me some challenges.
I challenge a leader at a company to actually have Regina and I come in and do a workshop with you all. Mm-hmm. I challenge you all to do that because you all typically bring in people that are safe and going to hold your hands and all of that. Mm-hmm. And our message is the same if we're speaking to someone at a public school or if we're speaking to someone at Google. Mm-hmm. It's the same. And by the way, the head of Google of Canada came to Deconstructing Karen world premiere in Toronto and said watching the movie took her further than close to 7-figure DEI efforts over the past few years. A 90-minute movie. So just to give you a sense, right? And so what I would say to all of you is read the book, start talking to each other about it. Like definitely put your oxygen mask on first. You need to worry about yourself before you start worrying about, and stop worrying about us. Worry about yourselves. Like that's ultimately what this book is about. This whole DEI is white saviorism. Like you, Chantal, don't know. We're telling you what we need. We need you all to make yourselves right. We don't need you to come up with, we're not your pet projects. We're not your passion projects. You worry about yourselves and things will absolutely shake out better. I have very few friends now, but I'd say 50% of them are white and they're the white people who've been doing this work. And I trust them. Mm-hmm. I trust them and I can tell them when I don't. And I can tell them very frankly when they're fucking up and vice versa, you know? So that's what I would say is start worrying about yourself and stop worrying about everyone else. Create spaces at your company where you can actually read a book together as a book club that's called White Women.
Yeah.
Inclusion and diverse. I hate the word diversity.
Diversity, it's really hard. Yeah.
White supremacy word. All of that sucks. Read this book and start talking to each other, literally talking to each other. It doesn't happen. That's why it's like such a radical act.
Yes. No, 100%. Well, and I appreciate that that is the bulk of your, you know, I'm going through this book, right? You know, and I was doing my I'm a racist. But then there's a point where you're just like, what do I do? And that is the thrust of what you're talking about. Is having these conversations. Well, first learning and imprinting what it means to be a white woman and how do I want it to go versus how have I been taught that it needs to go? Part one. Part two is to be in community and to keep the conversations. And I guess what I was saying is there's always room for this conversation in whatever context. We don't have to have we're going to have a diversity and inclusion conversation. This can be carved out in the field of leadership. And it has been, not as overtly as I would like. And what we run up against is sensitivity on the participants. People are not all ready to have this conversation.
But they never will be. And, you know, as right. It's been 400 years. And like at some point, you just have to put your big girl pants on and get to work. And it takes leaders. So there's, you know, a Black woman who does DEI at one of my kids' schools. And she read the book. Right. And this is a Richmond, Virginia conservative is good for racist private school. And she was like, this book literally is a tool and I'm making every faculty member read it and they're going to read it. And then we can talk about it. And it has been, you know, it's been tough, but guess what? People are coming out on the other side.
Oh, yeah.
The other thing is have a little more expectations for yourselves. I would say that like this, I can't do it. This is too hard and I'm not ready. Like want more for yourself, have a little self-respect and want more for yourself because you can do it. Just like we want the men in our lives to be able to do better, be better. And it's not by them handing out, like pulling us along, right? Mm-hmm. It's about them acknowledging what toxic masculinity looks like. Mm-hmm. And deconstructing it every single day. Like men just being like, okay, I'm going to hire one woman or put one woman on the board. No, thank you. That's not helpful, you know, because that's not safe. And that's what we've been seeing in the past, especially since, and now it's gone the other way because it's the white lash after the summer of 2020. Mm-hmm. But all this like dropping in a bunch of Black and brown people into a space. And I can say this safely about Colorado. I grew up in Richmond, Virginia, where I live now. Then I lived 13 years in New York City and then 9 years in Colorado. Colorado was the bluest place I lived and also the most deeply racist, unsafe place that I lived. I feel like such a relief being out of there because Colorado is 100% lipstick on a pig. Let us drop in a handful of Latinos and Black people. There's no Asians. So that was not even a thing. And the institution is so toxic because there's no decolonizing happening. There's no conversations happening and everyone leaves and then everyone leaves and then they can't understand. Wait a second. We invested all this money and time in hiring all these people and now everyone's gone. They're ungrateful. Like what's wrong with these people? You've got it. And much before you bring in people who look like me and look like Regina, you have to have these conversations and then you're going to have different results after that. Mm-hmm. I promise you, you will.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The other thing that we're seeing, just to kind of jump off around here, is, again, in leadership is sometimes we take on a client and they said, you know, we're having, first of all, the attrition right now. It's not just the it's not just the great resignation or quiet quitting, but the attrition among especially Black African-American women in tech is pretty potent right now. And again, I'm sort of, this is not like researched with statistics, but we've come across managers who are too soft. They're not giving growth feedback. They're so handling everything with white gloves, not having any difficult conversations because they're just scared of saying the wrong thing. And, you know, these women are leaving because they're like, I can't grow. They're just giving me lip service. And this feeling of over politeness. And so that brings up the tension of, you know, when are we making things, you know, we want psychological safety, right? But if we wait for psychological safety, I don't know what to say, if we all wait for women in general, especially women of color, which is, I don't even know if that's the right term now after reading your book, I don't even know what to say. But like, if we wait for psychological safety, we're going to be another 400 years, right? So there's that. And then there's this other piece, whereas if people like managers are being taught to make everything psychologically safe, we never get to those difficult conversations and we never get to the real underlying feedback. So what's your take on what's happening there?
Why? It's a very simple question. Why is it that people aren't ready? Why is it that it's all by design? Everything you just said is by design. It is all by design that you don't get to it. It is all by design that Black women leave. It is all by design that, you know, our kids enter middle school and they've already been completely socialized and institutionalized into this stuff. And so that's what we're saying. Interrogate it all.
Yeah.
And you cannot... I keep coming back to this. You cannot talk about what's happening right now with Black women in tech without going back. It's not, slavery is not that long ago. Chattel slavery is not that long ago, right? Like, I was born in Richmond, Virginia, a little over 100 years after slavery ended, in quotes. Slavery has never really ended, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it is a long Operation Wetback, Chinese Exclusion Act, mm-hmm. Japanese internment. We call it internment. Those were concentration camps of Japanese Americans. People who were born in this country were put into concentration camps. Were Germans? Were Italians? No. So we have the Department of Homeland Security was created to criminalize people who look like me. I was a third year law student at NYU when September 11th happened. I was at the World Trade Center that morning because my clinic was at the U.S. Attorney's Office next door. So I was coming up the stairs, you know, and I was one of the people who was running up the street barefoot. I left my apartment in Chelsea that morning as the model minority, and I came home that evening as a terrorist. Okay. I went to work on Wall Street shortly thereafter. I clerked for a federal court of appeals judge who was on the same bench as Sam Alito at the time, who then went on to, you know, write the scrap Roe versus Wade. You cannot talk about any of these things until you acknowledge how all of our experiences have been different. So my white classmates who were also running up the street that day had a very different experience in life after that. Mm-hmm. Right? My Black classmates have always had a different experience. Mm-hmm. And so until and unless we are acknowledging the reality and the history, you cannot, and I keep coming back to this lipstick on a pig, you cannot solve for anything until you ask yourself, why could it be that Black women have given the finger to these tech companies? Yeah. It's because Black women have been at the bottom of our ecosystem from the inception. And we are not all women, right? You and I have very different power.
Totally.
And, you know, I'm in between. And so nothing can change. And that's on purpose. So a lot of DEI groups have been formed to put check marks.
Yeah.
And say, we've got things covered. We have this department, without taking the fangs out of the systems of oppression that keep everything humming.
Mm. Mm. Yes. Yeah. And one of the things, as someone who's like part of that system, totally want to just keep saying it. It's like me looking into the mirror saying I'm a racist. Right. It's hard. Okay. And so one of the things that you have in this is like an early chapter, but and you mentioned it again, we need you guys to be right. Meaning like, get your shit together is what you're saying, and recreate what it means to be a white woman and what it means to be for yourself, and reclaim that, recreate it. But you said something about perfectionism, like, what the hell is it with you white women and your focus on perfectionism? I would like to hear you say that, because in my experience, I feel like that's one that kind of transcends race. And I was surprised at that. So tell me about that, because I think that will probably ring true. I mean, that was, you know, okay, I'm raising my hand. Yes, I am a recovering perfectionist and would like to let go of that. But why is that part of this discussion?
There's an adage of a Black woman had said, and I wish I'd remembered where I saw it years ago, which is, if white women spent the same amount of time dismantling racism as they did trying to lose weight, we would have been done with this centuries ago. And that's the whole thing. It's to keep you all. Mm-hmm. And by the way, sure, it applies across the board, because we've internalized white supremacy culture. So when you say it applies across the board, all white supremacy culture applies across the board, because we're all aspiring to whiteness. Mm-hmm. So of course we're all doing the same things. We don't have your power though. So you all have a lot more power. So when you behave in these toxic ways, it's far more dangerous than when I behave in these toxic ways, because I don't have the power you have. So by creating, men, white men have to always be right. That's mm-hmm. the mansplaining. White men have to be right. White women have to be perfect. Mm-hmm. And a critical component of, well, there is no perfection without white skin. So I don't have a chance. Regina doesn't have a chance. So white skin is a necessary but insufficient component of perfectionism. But the con to all of it is there is no perfect. There's literally, it's an impossible goal. So right. All of you will die trying, hating yourselves and hating each other. So that's the thing. I'll tell you what's interesting is, at every dinner, mm-hmm. towards the end, we'll say, So who do you all, I mean, because typically at least 50% of the women at the dinner do not like Regina or I or both. Usually it's me that they dislike the most. Don't like us, but we'll say, who do you all dislike more than you like, dislike the two of us in this moment? And always one will just be like, oh my God, and raise her hand and say, each other. And that's it. If you all are competing with each other to be the thinnest, the prettiest, have the best hair, have the best looking husbands, have the smartest, best looking children, have the best homes, how can you be in community with each other? The opposite of community is competition. And you all are like stabbing each other in the back constantly. And when you don't have community, it's really bad. And if you can't be in community with each other, you cannot be in community with us. Mm-hmm. So that's what we say is like, stop striving for this impossible ideal, which P.S. white supremacy and patriarchy, men, you're men. Do you know why we have gotten so much attention from Fox News? I mean, 5-minute piece. They don't care about Regina and I. We are nobodies. We are nobodies. It is you. If white women, especially white women with money and power, stop caping for whiteness and join our gender solidarity, it's over. And the way they've done this is by making you dance for their attention, making you dance for their dollars, making you dance for their companionship and their matrimony. Mm-hmm. You all are so terrified of pissing off your husbands and not being hot enough for your husbands and having your husbands want to go have sex with other people or not have respect for you. You all are just, it is wild. It is wild. I mean, we've had women say that this is the first thing, our programs are the first thing that's helped them kick their eating disorders of 20 years. Mm. Because it's not even about race. It is about you all dropping this nonsense. And when you can actually eat, and take care of yourself and not be obsessed with looking a certain way, you actually have relationship. Right now, white women's friendships are very transactional. It's the way you look. Do you like to do Pure Bar together? I mean, Cherry Creek, Denver, Colorado, where I just left, has literally turned into Disney World for white women. It's Pure Bar, green juice, you know, like, it's Barry's boot camp. That's all you're doing. And you walk through there and it's a really bizarrely thin, waify women who look like they haven't eaten for decades, going from one exercise class, grabbing a $20 green juice on their way to the next one to go meet someone for a salad, you know, before they go pick up their kid. Like it's everyone's so like robotic. It's really weird and depressing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, just for the listeners, the chat, it's chapter one, actually. Okay. Your quest for perfection is killing us and you. I mean, the chapter titles in this book are just, they're so confronting and so powerful. And yeah, so I didn't realize it was chapter one because the intro is so long.
I know. You need the setup before you can.
I know you do need the setup, people. Please stick with it for our listeners. And, you know, strangely enough, there's so much compassion in the book for a book that has such a strong voice and such an ass kicking. The voice is dripping with compassion and you will want to hang out with Syra and Regina. And, are you still doing the dinners? Speaking of hanging out with the two of you and what's the expansion for that? Now that the documentary is coming out, I can only imagine.
We are personally going to do a couple cities every year. Mm-hmm. We are actually in the process of, we have our first one next week, which we're delighted about, of training Black and Brown women around the world to do their own. So, yes. You know, people know their own communities better than we do. So that's the hope, is that women of color in their own communities can do it. And then next year, we're going to do a six city tour, I think, of a day with us. And it's going to be a screening of the movie, a book talk. And then we're going to have an hour of like a happy hour or coffee or something where we just community build and everyone can sit and talk, because we just had our book launch in Denver. I'm sorry you couldn't make it, Chantal. It was amazing. It was fully sold out, 150 people.
Amazing.
And what was amazing about it is we show the trailer for the film Mm-hmm. Everyone was like, oh my God, I want to watch the whole thing. But everyone stayed for a long time at afterwards to meet each other.
Yes.
Like, oh, you're interested in this work? Can we exchange phone numbers? Can we exchange emails? That's our vision. And so we're going to do it at six cities next year so we can help facilitate building community around this anti-racism work.
That's amazing. And what we can do is we have about 50 coach facilitators working for Emerging Women and Emerging Human, and many of those would be interested in potentially getting trained in this, so we can let everybody know. In the speaker's notes, if you're up and running with a website, we'd like to put that link in there. And please count on Emerging Women to help grow and spread the word, not just for Denver. Of course, we're actually international more than we are nationally in any place, but please put us on your list for helping you spread the word for that. It's been an honor to spend this time.
Thanks, Chantal. And I'd love if you could help us just get everyone buy the book.
Absolutely.
Read the book. And if you all as Emerging Women want to do a book club, we will Zoom in and like facilitate the conversation at the end.
Absolutely.
Of the book.
Let's do it. Yeah. I mean, here we are. I want to do that.
Yeah.
Like I said, it's an ass kicker, but it's very motivating. And I'll tell you, the apathy right now, just in general with the women's movement, not just in terms of racism, is appalling. And so when I read something that gets me going, you know, I definitely think we all need this kind of inspiration and this kind of real, like, I don't know, it's sort of like the inspiration's in the messiness, you know?
Thank you.
More to come.